This is Mile High.
Do I want to tell the story or do I want to show the mess?
You've got a lot of work to do between Mile High.
The time has come where we can know.
We have a responsibility, an ethical and moral responsibility.
We have to do it better in order to move people along.
Up, down, inside out.
If you get your mind right,
it is not. It is a receiver of thought.
Because love is my first technique.
It's now time for the show.
Welcome to the Mile High Podcast. This is your host, Daniel Knowles. I look forward to seeing you at Mile High, August 18th to 21st. This year, 2016, Mile High 4. If you have not registered yet because you've been living under a rock, then get out from under the rock. Go to www.milehighcairo.org. And I'm very excited about the podcast that we are doing today. One of my close, dear personal friends is our guest today. And what I would like to say is now, last year when we've done these, this was just a webinar put on YouTube. Now you're going to be able to get this on YouTube, on Facebook, on Libsyn, on Stitcher, on iTunes. You'll be able to directly download it. So you are going to get Mile High Movement moving forward and have access to this all year round. So this is not just an event that's happening one weekend, but you're going to get really great information from the people that are part of the Mile High Movement all year round, so your experience continues all year round. And today, I'm very grateful to be here with our guest, who almost needs no introduction, and he looks very presidential today. If you're seeing the video, he looks very presidential, and you're missing out on that if you're on the audio. But he's well-known in chiropractic, Dr. Jack Borla. He's a 1997 graduate of Palmer College. He graduated as valedictorian of his class. He's received numerous awards and scholarships that actually are locked up in a vault for safekeeping. He practices in Redwood, California since 98. He currently serves as president of the International Federation of Chiropractors and Organizations, which I'm sure we're going to get to talk about. He's a regent for Sherman College, co-founder of Schubel Vision Seminars, and very delighted to have you here, Dr. Jack Borla.
Thanks, Jack. It's great to be here. I got to tell you that I watched the Joel Hinch podcast.
Ah.
I super enjoyed your portion of it.
Oh, good. That was the best part.
Well, his not so much, but yours was outstanding.
Yes. Yes. And I know that you and Joel Hinch go way back. So
we do. We actually were in school together at the same time out here in California. He is the elder in terms of chiropractic, but I'm the elder in terms of the important thing, which is age.
Right. And thus wisdom also.
I would hope that goes hand in hand.
Yes. and as that goes with your favorite quote that you shared with me, that age does not diminish the extreme disappointment of having a scoop of ice cream fall.
Oh, nothing worse than that, almost.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, a chainsaw across the forearm is not too good either, but losing an ice cream cone is not a good thing.
No, not at all. So now let's talk about, for people, start at the beginning, how did you find your way into chiropractic?
Yeah, that's a great question. As we always say, it's a great question. It's a great question in that it's a complicated question, and I'll tell you why I believe it's complicated, but we'll work our way through it. I was born at a time when social change was really beginning and escalating. I was born in 1955. It happens to be the same year that Rosa Parks refused to get in the back of the bus. It's a year that Albert Einstein passed away. And I think he passed away actually to make room for me to come into the existence, but that's just my personal thought. We saw civil rights actions beginning to elevate. We saw John F. Kennedy as the president of our country, and he was for social change. We saw Martin Luther King. We saw Kent State massacre happening. We saw the riots in Berkeley, California. And all this was about social change. So I was born into a time when my brain was primed for social change. And I remember one day, it was 1967, it was December, and I had a kind of a ritual that I had with my father. We would get up early in the morning and have breakfast together, And he was about natural stuff. So he owned one of the first natural food stores in California.
Oh, wow.
So he had a couple of them, one in Berkeley, one at Stanford. But he was into things natural. He was into social change. He came from, he's an immigrant from Algeria. He came to the United States because he heard the streets were paved with gold. He wanted to make changes in his life and that of his family's life. And so I was in this kind of environment of change is good.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, we would have breakfast together, and then we would read the newspaper together. And I would all start out with the sporting section, and he would start out with the main section, and then we would trade sections. And after I got done reading, he would quiz me on what I read, because he wanted me to understand the events of current day. And there was a fair amount of pressure on me as a young boy, being a Jewish boy. I had a choice of either being an attorney or being a doctor. And I knew I didn't want to be an attorney. I didn't like arguing. But doctor, kind of sat in the back of my mind. And I remember reading once in the newspaper in December of 1967, an article about a South African medical doctor who completed successfully the first heart transplant. It was Christian Bernard. And I remember reading that and being struck with this idea of how enormous that was.
Mm-hmm.
We took an organ out of someone else's body, put it into another body, have that body with some manipulation accept that organ and continue to function. And I thought, what an incredible thing this human body is.
Mm-hmm.
And so I began to begin interested in health and in possibly a career in medicine. So I had that in the back of my mind, and I wanted to make a change in the world. I knew that, and I wanted to do it through perhaps health. And, you know, as life has it, you go through life and you do different things. And so I didn't get exposed into the idea of chiropractic until much later, when at the time my now ex-wife, who's a delightful human being, woke up one New Year's Day with the inability to move her legs.
Hmm.
And, of course, we were shocked. We didn't know what to do. So I picked her up. I put her in the car and I took her to the emergency room. And this was early in the morning, and of course the medical people did what they thought they had to do, and that was they imaged her and they injected her and they medicated her and they do all the things that they thought they could do. And by about 3:30 in the afternoon, they said to me, there's nothing more that we can do. You have to kind of go home and see what happens, and then follow up with your medical doctor on the next day.
Right.
So it was New Year's Day, and we went home, and, you know, we're distraught. Here's this woman who the night before was vibrant and healthy and had all of her faculties able to move, and now she can't.
Right.
So we got home, and, you know, we're making our New Year's Day calls, Happy New Year, Happy New Year. And a friend of mine says, you know, how you doing? I said, well, not so good. And he says, what's up? And I told him, you know, we took my ex-wife to a hospital, and she couldn't move her legs, and she's no better now. And he says, well, why don't you call my chiropractor? And honestly, at the time, you know, my thinking was, well, what's a chiropractor going to do? First of all, I didn't really know what chiropractor
right,
did.
Right.
It's New Year's Day, and you know, who in the right mind is going to come see us on New Year's Day? And he says, no, you call my chiropractor. I'll give you his number. So he gave me his number, and I called this guy. First of all, I was shocked that he answered his phone.
Right.
And secondly, after I explained what happened, I was shocked for him to say, come to my office at 5:30 today.
Mm-hmm.
On New Year's Day.
Wow.
Yeah, so I got her back in the car, got to his office at 5:30, carried her into the office. He asked what happened, and we told him exactly what we did. He said, this is what we're going to do. We're going to look for something called nerve function. And if we find any kind of deficits within her nerve function, then I can do what's called an adjustment, and we'll see how that works. I said, fantastic. So he took x-rays, and he did his evaluation, and he put her on this table that went down that I had never seen before. And he did this thing where he put her like in a pretzel position, and he adjusted her, and we heard some noise. And she got up and walked out.
Wow.
Yeah. And I thought, that's kind of interesting. So here's this woman, and I understood where he's coming from, and I, of course, studied science. And so I said to him, I understand that this is kind of a miracle. He says, well, it's not really a miracle. This is just what the body does when it's working proper. And I said, well, that makes great sense. I said, I don't have any of these outward problems. You know, I have issues, but I didn't have any problems. And I said, I wonder what about me? He says, well, what about you? We won't know until we have you come in for an evaluation. So I scheduled myself for an evaluation, and he explained what he was going to do, and he adjusted me, and he put me on under care, and I never missed an appointment in his office until he passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And when he passed away, my wife and I found another chiropractor, and we continued our care because we just understood that it was the right thing to do. And so I had it in the back of my mind, this amazing thing that happened to her this wonderful idea that my body's going to function at a higher level because I have unobstructive nerve function. And so as time would have it, I had a career. I taught for a couple of years at San Francisco State University. I was a family planning counselor. I worked at Stanford University and I ran their blood center. I became involved in biotechnology where I became a director of a large company. I did that for about 10 years. I then left biotechnology. I went owned and operated 3 restaurants, which I highly don't recommend to anybody.
Right.
Bad choice for a career. And when I got done with my restaurants, I was faced with, well, what am I going to do next?
Right.
And chiropractic just kind of came to me. And so I thought I'll look into chiropractic schools. Fortunately, in the Bay Area, there were 2. I picked 1, went to school. And from the very first day that I sat in those chairs, I knew that was the right place for me to be. I was 39.
Wow.
I was 19, 20, 21, like some of my classmates, but I was 39. But I knew it was the right thing for me. And so I got my start because of this great story. And we oftentimes hear of great stories leading to people who want to become chiropractors. It wasn't something great to me. It was great to my ex-wife at the time. But I never forgot the unbelievable results of, 1, the explanation, 2, the very thorough evaluation, which was different than what we had seen in the hospitals.
Right.
And 3, the results were fantastic. And so that's what led me into chiropractic.
And you said some things that are really important there.
Thank you.
Which are that there was an evaluation.
Yeah.
Right. And that there was an explanation.
Yeah.
And that there were results. And
yes.
Unfortunately, so often today in chiropractic, the ability to evaluate, explain, get results has been educated out of chiropractors.
I agree with you.
Yeah. And
yeah.
I feel like those things are the foundation of what a successful practice has to have. And it seems so basic. And there are also some of the things that I know, like, for example, we'll talk a little bit about the IFCO, that those are things that are central to the IFCO's simple principles relative to subluxation. That, let's talk a little bit about that. Why you're president of the IFCO. Why is the IFCO important?
The IFCO is important for me for a number of reasons. There's personal reasons, there's professional reasons. One is I had another incident in my life where chiropractic shone and is, I believe, the direct result of why my son is alive today. And so I see chiropractic every time I see his eyes. I'm reminded that absent chiropractic, I wouldn't have this kid. This kid means an awful lot to me. So my 6-year-old son is my everyday reminder that chiropractic has profound effects when applied properly for the right reasons. Now, I'm always reminded about that, and I feel very strongly that had it not been for chiropractic, I wouldn't have him. So I will do all that I can to make sure that we have the ability to analyze, detect, and correct vertebral subluxations when present. At minimum, and I think not only at minimum, but at most, I think that's enough. Certainly, in the 2 instances I was exposed to, which were rather dramatic, one is my ex-wife who got off the table and walked,
right,
and 2, my son who is alive today because of simple chiropractic, the evaluation, the detection, the correction of vertebral subluxation. So I have a personal desire every day to make sure that we keep that sacred, that we keep that well promoted, and that we offer that ability to be checked and correct and adjusted when necessary to everybody. And it's a completely different mindset of medicine. And we know that medicine is important. I know that I personally have had great effects when in crisis with medicine, but that's not where I go to for general health.
Mm-hmm.
Not where I go to have my optimum expression of life experience.
Right.
That's not what I do.
Right.
Chiropractic for me is that. Chiropractic for our founders is that. And we've been asked by our founders to make sure that we can protect this entity of chiropractic so that we can have others experience the profound effects of a properly functioning nerve system.
Right. Absolutely.
So the IFCO is the vehicle for me to be able to express that deep gratitude and desire to make sure that the concept of vertebral subluxation detection and correction is maintained for as long as we are in existence. And I think that what's going to happen, Danny, is that as we begin to learn more about how the body works, we will begin to see more and more chiropractors becoming very prominent in this life expression business.
Right. Absolutely.
So that the IFCO is the vehicle for me that allows me to make sure that those things that have allowed my life to be as good as it is to remain in existence.
Wow. Very well said. And
thank you.
With that, can you share a little bit for people that don't know about the IFCO, what it stands for, what its mission is?
Sure. So I think there's a lot of misconceptions about what the IFCO was and is. And one of the things that we have agreed on as a structure is to do a better job this year, 2016, of branding ourselves and identifying who we are better so that there are no more misconceptions. And we're grateful to have your wife, by the way, Rochelle, on our board. She joined our board this year, and we're happy to have her talents there. So the IFCO is really about one thing, and that is allowing for the detection and correction analysis of verbal subluxation to occur.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people both inside the profession and outside the profession who would like to see us go away. And you're experiencing some of that, I think, in Colorado. It's all over the place, and it's not just in the United States. It's globally.
There's people that want subluxation to go away from chiropractic, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some chiropractic associations would like to see that word subluxation removed, considered an historical concept, and don't appreciate the importance of that as being what defines us as separate and distinct.
Mm-hmm.
And we are separate and distinct. And we should be proud of that separation and distinction rather right. than trying to blend in.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah. and I'll tell you something about that that's my value system is that there's a lot of organizations that you don't know what they stand for.
Yeah.
And I know what the IFCO stands for. I know they're about chiropractic being delivered, being able to be delivered in a non-therapeutic model for the correction yeah. of subluxation. So the IFCO, there's lots of organizations within our profession, and you see this in organizations, period, that you don't necessarily know what they stand for. And that's very confusing. And the IFCO is very clear what they stand for. They're the only international organization that has this core value of subluxation, detection, analysis, and correction in a non-therapeutic model, meaning that if you're an asymptomatic child, you should get your spine checked and be able to get an adjustment just because subluxations in and of themselves are a detriment to health. And I will even say one of the most severe detriments to a person's health that exist, right? Right. And I personally have this value system that if you have certain beliefs, values, like I'm not a pro immunization person, a pro-vaccination person. I'm not going to spend personally a lot of time doing a lot of the canvassing work. However, I am going to be a member and support with my resources and energy to the degree I can the people and organizations that will do that. And the same thing with the IFCO. I feel people should be a member of an organization that they feel alignment with. And that's why this year we're going to be directing funds from Mile High to the IFCO.
Yeah, and we greatly appreciate that. Thank you, Danny.
And I would like to see people that listen to this become members of the IFCO if, only if, those values are something that are important to you.
Right. And I agree completely, and I see a subpopulation within chiropractic for which this is very important, and that's the students. And the reason is because I'm not sure how much they're getting of this in school.
Right.
And I'm certain that if we don't have a nice influx of students into this mindset of chiropractic, that chiropractic will not be too far off from being distinct or extinct.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that, at least on our watch, I know can't happen, but eventually we will pass. And when we do, who's left? And so right. we have to make sure that the pipeline behind us is filled with those people who are willing to stand up and promote chiropractic. And I use the word promote rather than defend because I think that the terminology that we oftentimes use in chiropractic is somewhat counter to the real belief and philosophy that we have, and that is right. about life and nature and health and expression. If you don't mind, I'd like to read something to you since we're on the subject of terminology.
I'm really impressed that you read. Yes, please.
Yeah, well, it's big print, just so you know. But this is a book that I have.
Okay.
If you read, it's called The Brain's Way of Healing. It's written by Norman Doidge. He's an MD. He wrote The Brain That Changes Itself. And I think what we're going to see in the upcoming years, and I hope that Matt McCoy captures this, is an increase in chiropractors being involved in brain research, because we know how profoundly the nerve system, and specifically the spine, can affect how the brain perceives and therefore acts on our behalf. But this particular medical doctor wrote in his book how important it is that we use the terminology that we do. And I'll just read to you what he says about the medical terminology and how he'd like us to not copy this. He says, modern medicine began with modern science, which was conceived as a technique for the conquest of nature, or, as one of its founders, Francis Bacon, put it, the relief of man's estate. This idea of conquest gave rise to the many military metaphors that are used every day in medical practice, as Abraham Fuchs, the former dean of medicine at McGill University, shows. Medicine became a battle against disease. Drugs are magic bullets. Medicine fights the war against cancer and combats AIDS with doctors' orders from the therapeutic armamentarium. This armamentarium, as physicians call their bag of therapy tricks, honors invasive high-tech techniques more scientifically serious than non-invasive ones. This is definitely a time for a martial attitude in medicine, especially in emergency medicine. If a blood vessel in the brain bursts, the patient needs invasive surgery and a neurosurgeon with nerves of steel to operate. But the metaphor creates problems too, and the very idea that it is possible to conquer nature is a fond, naive hope. What I see us doing, Danny, is we chiropractors are kind of buying into the vernacular of medicine. We talk about being in the trenches. And interestingly enough, if you were just to Google the phrase in the trenches, the first thing that pops up are images of our military soldiers in the trenches.
Right.
Now, that's not what I want our profession to look at. We hear about chiropractic warriors. That's a kind of a negative connotation. How about if we start using chiropractic heroes?
Right.
We hear about the grinding and the defending. These are all terms that are on the other side of where I think chiropractic needs to be. And what IFCO is all about is the promotion of the detection and correction of vertebral subluxation, not the defense of it.
Right.
We don't want to defend it. We want to promote it because it's something that we know will result in optimum health and optimum personal expression. So the IFCO is very much into this changing of the way we are being perceived as more. Some people actually thought we were hate straights.
Right.
And that was something that was years ago. I don't think that is that popular these days anymore. But what we stand for is a group of people who really want to see this unbelievable system of health evaluation, expression evaluation, and allowing people to become the best that they can be because of proper nerve function.
Well, and there's a very famous quote from Bruce Lipton. And Bruce Lipton says, and I know you know it as I'm about to say it, that a cell can either be in defense or growth. It can't be in both. And
right.
So much of the chiropractic profession, both, and we'll just say the two sides of the chiropractic profession, the more allopathic and the more philosophical, whatever term you want to label them,
sure.
Both sides of that has been in defense. I mean,
yeah.
The profession as a whole, and that's a lot of why going towards more medical things, it's out of defense and that we don't have something to give versus like we have something so huge and you can't grow it when you're trying to be on the defensive.
Absolutely. And even the allopathic portion of our profession are defending what we do to be included
right.
in the very, very terminology that this doctor says that we should not be using.
Right.
Absolutely. So it's interesting. And none of this is new. I mean, none of what we're experiencing is new. We know that if we look at some of the writings of BJ,
right.
Especially early on, he was very well versed in seeing things for what they were and what they were going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And if you pick up the book, The Great Undertow, which was printed in 1929, you will read in there as if it was just written today.
Right.
Because he had this ability to see things very clearly.
Mm-hmm.
He was able to kind of predict what was going to happen. And honestly, we are living the things that he said were going to happen. And it's up to us now as a profession to kind of regroup, to decide that what we want to do for the profession is to grow it to expand our touch. And I believe that IFCO is doing that globally, both in Europe and Latin America now. And so we're happy to be the promoters of chiropractic.
Yep. And that's such a powerful position. And I'm so proud of the IFCO for taking that position. For philosophy, I'd like to delve a little bit into philosophy. Why is your philosophical thought process important for your life and your practice?
Joel Kinch spoke about this during his podcast with you earlier.
I know, and you're more wise than he is, so I wanted to ask you as well.
I wish you would include handsome in that description as well, but I'll leave that to you. I think, first of all, life is about a philosophy. How you choose to live your life is based on a philosophy that you have, a belief system that you have. And the chiropractic philosophy is, of course, based on the major premise, and from there we deduce down into what we want to express for our lives. I think the mistake that we make for many chiropractors is that we believe we have to take our 33 principles and shove them down our patients' throats. And if they don't understand it, then they don't get it, and therefore they can't be part of our practice. And I think that that's not wise. I think that that's not very loving, and it's not necessary at all. I think what they need to understand is that within their bodies, there's this unbelievable power that allows them to be well. And when that power is unobstructed, they can express 100% of what they were intended to be. People get that. They're not going to understand anything else other than that, because quite frankly, that's our vernacular. It's not theirs. So the philosophy is important because you have to know who you are and what you stand for. In terms of the philosophy as it's reduced down into business, you also have to know who you can serve. The mistake that we make is that we think that we are supposed to serve the 7.3 billion people on the planet, and you know as well as I do that neither one of us can do that individually. Nor am I supposed to do the entire population. There's this a certain population that I was intended to serve, and so I must understand my strengths in addressing and taking care of that portion of the population. So we have to take our philosophy, which is this unbelievable healing power that's within us, and direct that towards a part of the population that we believe that we were intended to serve. And so I know that what my ideal client is, I know who my ideal patient is, and so I know where to find them. And so my focus is on providing this unbelievable source of life expression to that portion of the population.
Excellent. And that's so well clearly thought out versus just I'm going to offer whatever I can to anybody who walks in, which yeah. sees so much. And then the practitioner tries to be everything to whoever walks in. And yeah. you've been in other business models outside of chiropractic. How well does that work in any business?
It works in every business. You can't be everything to everybody. You've got to be something to somebody.
Right.
And so once you've identified who you are and what your beliefs are, it's amazing how pretty soon through your door will walk in people with similar philosophies about life and how they want to express themselves. We don't have a lot of athletes that come to us. We don't serve, you know, the 49ers or the Giants or the Sharks. That's just not who we want to serve. We want to serve the population which we've defined as sandwich moms.
Mm-hmm.
And sandwich moms are those moms who are sandwiched between two generations, one taking care of their children and the other taking care of their elderly parents. And the stress that's put onto these women is phenomenal. And so we believe that if we can help them be better versions of themselves, they will, one, raise their children better, and two, have more patience to take care of their parents. And so that's what we focus on. Now, does that mean that we don't see men? Of course we do. We see their spouses. Does that mean we don't see kids? Well, of course we see their children. And sometimes we'll even see their parents. But that's not who we market to. We market to the moms because we want them. They're highly, highly, highly motivated to be well mm-hmm. all the time. And we just have a great time with them. Mm-hmm. So our office is filled with these sandwich moms.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. It's outstanding. And also talking about business, I see behind you, for the people that are watching your video, you have a mirror there, so I know you like looking at yourself often, so that's good. But there are all these great posters that I'm glad you got into the poster design business now.
Yeah, thank you. I actually did these myself. There's this bald guy walking around who thinks he actually did them, but I'm the creator, and no, those, as you know, those are from Mind Virus. And we use them because they help us to explain what we do, how we do it, and why we do it. And so everything about our office, I believe, is very congruent with who we are and what we believe, what we stand for. And it's funny because we tour our own office with different eyes, mm-hmm. to make sure we are consistent. And so we don't let things that are inconsistent creep into our practice. We run a very simple practice. It's quite elegant, but it's really simple because we've identified and we know who we are. And maybe this is because it comes with age. I hope not. I hope it just comes with wisdom. But if you can't be all things to everybody, so just be something great for somebody.
Very wise words.
Thanks.
Now, and I also know that talking about business, you've had other businesses, like we mentioned, restaurants. So this is, you're someone who has been in business in many different forms. So what are some keys, whether you learn them within chiropractic or outside of chiropractic, what are some very important business principles for people? Because if we're going to get this message out to people, we have to be profitable. We have to be successful. There's no glory in being broke. So So what are some recommendations for people?
I think one of the misconceptions that we have as doctors of chiropractic is that we feel that we have to serve and not necessarily be in fair exchange. And sometimes people will think, well, if you're making a lot of money, then you're probably a crook or you're doing something shady. And that's not the case. I think that when you set yourself up with a business model where you define what you're going to do, and I think many doctors don't do that, define what you're going to do, who are you going to do it for, and what the exchange rate is going to be, then I think you have yourself a business. I think oftentimes people don't know who they're supposed to serve. Therefore, they take everybody, and they feel like they have to give stuff away.
Right.
Free exams, discounted rates. We don't discount anything in our office. Nothing. If you want a discount, go to Denny's or go somewhere else because you won't get it here.
Mm-hmm.
So we've decided that we're going to charge X amount for what we do.
Mm-hmm.
We feel comfortable and sometimes slightly uncomfortable with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, as for example, Sean Dill says, if you're not uncomfortable with your rates, then you got to raise them.
Right.
It's, I mean, there's that Shih Tzu again. It doesn't mean that you have to, you know, charge $1,000 a session unless you want to. But you got to charge something which is an exchange rate which would you feel comfortable, and which would the patient feel comfortable. So we found that kind of sweet spot for us where. We're not the cheapest in town, but I don't think we're the most expensive in town, but we're at a rate where we feel very comfortable and in fair exchange, because the worst thing you want to do is feel like you're giving something away, you're not getting something back. We don't want the idea of resentment to enter our office.
Right.
We consider, once you walk in that front door, whatever you've had, whatever problems you've had, leave them at the front door. You can pick them back up when you leave.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at you and let's care for you the best that we can. And in exchange for that, you're going to pay us a fee.
Right.
And it worked well. It works well for us. So you got to define who you are and what you do, and then assign a value to that.
Excellent. What do you feel are some you're a very learned man. You are very well read. And what are some business resources, whether they be books or something, maybe another medium other than print, that you think are very valuable to people?
There's lots. I think that the most important thing you have to do is you have to learn a mindset. And the mindset will then allow you to fall into other things. I think there's a number of mentors in and out of our profession who are terrific at allowing you to experience business at a higher level.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the greatest businessman in the world. I admit that. But I surround myself with people who are better than I am so I can learn from them. And the two people that I rely on mostly for this are Mark Swerlick and Sean Dill.
Mm-hmm.
I have great friends who keep me in check, like Liam Shulwell and Judd Nograde. You keep me in check. Steve Tullius, who I bounce ideas off and rely on him. because he has shown a great amount of success in his business model down in San Diego. I go to people who help keep me grounded philosophically, like Andy Roberts. I love reading and listening to people like Chris Kent, who not necessarily is a business guy, but he gives me confidence in what I do so that I can go out into my business community and do more. I think that networking is one of the things that we are deficient in as a profession, and I think it's one of the things that you have to do. So get involved in your community. I was most recently appointed to the board of directors for the YMCA for my area, because I want to get out into my community and serve them more and better. So the best way to do that is to become known.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I have some talents, which I can lend them, but they also have some resources which they can loan me.
Right.
So, you know, the books that you can read. Yeah, there's lots of books you can read. But I think it's the relationships with people that really enable you to become more successful, to whatever that means to you, but more successful. And when you become more successful, then you have more resources that you can turn around and give back mm-hmm. into the profession, for example. So I don't see any reason why doctors shouldn't be giving back. And BJ, in fact, another book, The Great Undertow,
mm-hmm.
BJ says in here there are some things that he requires us to do to maintain the profession. One is you got to give back. And so he says you can give back a number of ways. One is to support a leader, whoever that might be. Scott Garber is a leader, for example. Mm-hmm. You're a leader in your in the things that you do chiropractically. BJ says find a school with which you align yourself and give back to the school. Now you can give money, you can give your time, or you can give your talents, whatever it is you're going to do. He says to find an association, a state association that you support, and then give them your time, your talents, or your treasures. And he says, then find a national or international association that you can support and give back to them. And this is so I personally have looked at what do I do? I support three colleges. I actually support three of the colleges. I support Sherman. I support Barcelona College of Chiropractic. I support LifeWest. I support the IFCO for my international. And I support the Garden State Chiropractic Society. Because even though I'm not in New Jersey, and I support the people in New Jersey because I fear for my life if I don't support them. I've identified
it's protection.
That. It's protection. You know, we have that. Seriously, I looked at my state association, and although I served it for many years, felt that my alignment philosophically was better with another one, so I'm supporting the Garden State. And I think they're in pretty good hands, and they have people there who really understand chiropractic for what it is and will continue to promote it as such.
Yeah, and that's so vital. What do you feel? Now, you've held up a couple books here,
yeah.
And I noticed, because I'm very astute, I don't miss a thing, even though people think so. I noticed the you know, sticky notes, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, you're engaged with your reading. It's not passive.
Yeah.
What are some people have less resources for philosophy in chiropractic school. What are some – oh, look at that. What are some chiropractic philosophical resources that you'd recommend to people?
Okay. First and foremost, Volume 14, Chiropractic Textbook, Stevenson. Talk about stickies.
That's
all I have. There's so many stickies, there's no pages left. But you got to start with the foundation, and this is the foundation. And so this is what you want to do. This is the value of the morning sessions at Mile High, where you have Green Book studies.
Mm-hmm.
It's off of this book. We could spend the rest of our lives probably. In fact, here's the interesting thing. B.J. Palmer endorses this particular book as the manual for chiropractic. He says, until this book was written, we didn't have one.
Mm-hmm.
Stevenson, who wrote this book, says, the study of philosophy is a lifetime endeavor.
Right.
You could honestly, there's a finite number of pages here, but within this volume are incredible insights into chiropractic and the basis upon which we practice. This is why we're here. Yes, the science has changed since this was written, for sure. The science supports the philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is the number one resource I would look at chiropractically. There's a number of, you know, all the volumes of Green Books, which are great. What I suggest people do, and this is what we successfully did in California, especially in the Bay Area, is we formed a philosophy group. And it was called the Chiropractic Underground. Sean Dill and Lacey Book, and I, to some extent, decided that what we're going to do is we're going to go through as a group with different discussion leaders and dissect out the first text of this is, you know, this is a divided depression software here. So we went through the freshman text in its entirety, every single page. We brought out speakers from all over the country to do the leading the discussion with us. And so we went through this. San Diego's done it. And other people are starting to do this as well. This book alone can keep you busy. But then there's other people. There's Simon Sensen, for example, is he speaking at Mile High,
yes,
or did he speak?
Yes, he's speaking at Mile High. And the Berkshires.
You got to go and listen to Simon Sensen. This is a historian and a philosopher, modern day, who knows as much, if not more, about chiropractic philosophy and history than anybody else in our profession. And he writes a great blog, so get involved in his blog. Simon Sensen, you can friend him on Facebook, and I'm sure he'll be happy to send you information.
I'll tell you something that Simon Sensen uncovered about this, and then I want to hear what your next one is. But and I didn't know this, but he uncovered that Stevenson, for some time, lived in Boulder, Colorado.
You see? How about that? You know what Stevenson and I have in common?
No, what?
We both graduated from chiropractic school at 42.
Oh, wow, look at that.
Yeah, the difference is that he wrote a textbook, and I'm just, like, doodling on paper. So he had – but the interesting thing is back when Stevenson was in school, it was an older population of students. And, of course, it was 9 months or 12-month program. But they found that because of the maturity of the students that were attending chiropractic college, they didn't have to do a lot of the stuff that we do, a lot of the prerequisites. They had people who were highly, highly, highly motivated and inspired to become chiropractors who went through the course. And as a result, Stevenson was able to write this unbelievable textbook, which I encourage everybody to grab.
Right. Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. And you can do that on your own. You don't need a consultant or a coach to do that.
Yeah.
And it will make all the difference in your certainty, value, and communication of your objective with the people that you're serving. So easy thing, there's a habit to adopt rituals every day. And, you know, now talking to you for this last 30, 40 minutes, whatever it's been, I'm now understanding why, you know, people should know that you're a 25-year-old trapped in a 61-year-old body. I am.
You know, when I don't look in the mirror, I still think I'm 25. If someone says, you know, we want to play softball, I'm a shortstop ready to go. And then I look in the mirror. And I thought, oh, maybe not so much 25 anymore. But my mentality is still that of a 25-year-old. And fortunately, in my family, longevity is something that we all experience. And so I've had grandparents and great-grandparents live into the late 90s. And I expect to live a full life. Until then, chiropractic is one of the reasons I expect to live a full life. But one more thing before we leave the topic of resources for chiropractic. In addition to the chiropractic textbook, which is great, and all the other green books, which are fantastic, there are the events that we can go to. For example, Mile High. For example, the Berkshires. For example, and this is a selfish plug, Schubel Vision. There's dynamic growth going on right now in Australia. A group of chiropractors who have come together who are talking about chiropractic philosophy. And philosophy is great. It's absolutely essential, but you got to get some business training too.
Yeah.
So here's the resources that we spoke of earlier in terms of where you're going to get help in establishing, maintaining, and growing your business. And when we do that, what I find is that happy chiropractors are more productive chiropractors.
And you know, there's another one, Sherman Lyceum.
Sherman Lyceum, which is coming up, I believe, in April.
Yes. Yes. It was an incredible lineup. And South Carolina is a great place to visit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And if you want to travel abroad for some chiropractic, the IFCO is having our global summit in Mexico this year, March 18th and 19th.
And I am so excited to be there.
Yeah, and your wife is going to be there too.
Yeah, yeah.
How about that?
Yeah.
So we're happy to have everybody join us. It was time that we as an international organization begin to throw some love to the Latin American population in chiropractic. And so we have some very inspired chiropractors down there. Who are leading this, who are directing this and organizing it. We expect to have a great event down in Mexico for a couple of days. We're going to see nearly 200 people down there, which is a great time, great first time turnout for us, IFCO. So if you have it within you who you want to travel and you want to learn more about chiropractic philosophy and you want to support our Latin American brothers and sisters, the IFCO Global Summit in March. Great to have you. Come on down.
Yeah, I'm very excited about that. So a couple things, and we're running low on time, so we are not going to have time to discuss Liam Schubel. So my apologies, Liam Schubel, but we just do not have time to discuss you. One, How do people learn more about the IFCO or become a member?
IFCO, you can do one of two things. You can call me, you can text me, you can email me, you can write me, or you can go to our website, www.ifcocairo.org. Lots of great information on our website. Steve Tullius was instrumental in developing the website. We're actually going to do some refinements to it, make it a little bit more user-friendly, but there's great information. There's a membership site, area there we can sign up. Students should know that we rely on you. We would love to have you join us. Students is $50 for the entire time that you're in school, and your first year out is free.
Wow.
So that's, we can't make it any more affordable than that, other than if you paid for everybody, Danny, and I wish you would. So that'd be great. So students can join. Doctors, it's $500 a year. You can make monthly payments, you can make quarterly payments, you can pay the whole thing at once, whatever you want. But it allows you to join a group of like-minded people whose sole mission is to make sure that we have the ability to promote chiropractic as it was intended to by our founding foreparents. And it's the organization that will absolutely do all it can to make sure that you can practice chiropractic wherever you are in the world.
Excellent, excellent. So I'm really grateful for the IFCO, what they're doing. They're growing, they're on the move, and they're promoting chiropractic. I'm grateful for all that you do. And I want to remind people, Mile High, August 18th to 21st, www.milehighcairo.org. We'd love to see you there. You'll get to spend time with Jack Borla, which that in of itself is the only, that in itself is a reason to come. But we've got a stellar program Thursday through Saturday. Spend some time in Colorado, a beautiful place to visit. And enjoy this podcast. Subscribe on iTunes. If you like the information we're sharing, please share your feedback online. And also you can check it out on Stitcher and Facebook and YouTube and many other formats. So Dr. Jack Borla, thank you for what you do for chiropractic.
It's a great pleasure. Thanks for having me, Danny.
Like our page on Facebook, www.facebook.com/milehighchiro.